I spoke to the writer Russell T. Davis in February, in very much a pre-lockdown world. We started off talking about Queer as Folk. That seminal series was 20 years ago, and he noted the change in crew between that experience and his new series, Boys.
Yes, it's true.
Queer as Folk was 20 years ago, and just done a new gay one now for Channel 4. The difference in the crew was phenomenal. It's like the gay friendliness of a crew is an astonishingly different.
When you were filming Queer as Folk,
it wasn't hostile. No. It just felt very, very straight.
Awkward.
And maybe I was over-aware of that, and no one was rude to me. There was an edge sometimes, though. You felt like you were in a straight world. You were in a straight world. It was completely straight. And now, I'm not saying they're all completely gay on this show, but it's just a friendlier world. I mean, look, we're not working in a factory or in a shop where it might not be. We're in drama, which is gay-friendly, full stop. But it was different 20 years ago.
What scene did you film first, do you remember?
On Queer as Folk?
Yeah.
What a question. I think it was the school. I think it was Nathan's school. I think that was early on. So old Charlie Hunnam striding up and down. Yes, yes, yes.
So when then morning after he'd had sex,
Yes, I think so. That was certainly early on. Oh, because I was there every day and I can't think. Yeah, I think it must have been. And I remember because there were a lot of real school pupils there and he had to have some filthy dialogue with Donna, and I remember thinking, "Oh, please, let's not contaminate the children with our gayness." And I think I was over worried, and they were just happily strolling about being extras in a drama, which is fun for them.
When did you stop being over worried? I'm not sure I've left that behind.
Oh no, never. Oh, every day. We've just finished a shoot now, and the weight has gone off my shoulders like that. It's just all day, every day, waiting for a problem, waiting for a phone call, and often they're so well run that there aren't any problems. But nonetheless, you're kind of on standby. I feel like I'm on standby every moment of a shoot.
What is the relationship between the two, if there is any? I mean, is there any through line between Queer as Folk? Is it Boys, the one you've done?
Yes, Boys. That's the one on Channel 4 in the autumn. I think they're all the same.
No, I don't mean it like...
No, I literally think, here I am, again, doing more gays. It feels like one big straight line to me. I do sit there thinking, when are they going to stop me? It does. I firmly believe everything I write is all set in one world. The Daleks could turn around the corner at any moment. And I do, in my mind, anyone... It could walk into anyone from any one of my dramas.
I'd love to see Daleks on Canal Street.
That would be good.
Please.
That would be probably the last thing I write as they... never get made, but it'd be the last thing I write as they drag me away. Or drag me up, maybe.
So Boys is... How does it sort of relate? Obviously thematically it's about
it's the 80s. It's kind of funny that it's not the thing I wrote first. It's about the 80s, it's the arrival of AIDS. It starts in 1981 when this shadow from America in our minds is just beginning to trickle through with so much less information. No internet, no proper magazines or newspapers or sources of information. So it starts genuinely in an age of innocence. It goes from 1981 to 1991 when we were, things weren't over or solved by 91, but they were wiser by then. So it's a lot more fun than it sounds. It's about life during those 10 years and coping with this and surviving.
Well, things were very free, I suppose, and expansive and sort of sexually reckless. And that gay abandon, and literally and metaphorically, was sort of paid to.
There is a gay episode one, should be. Why don't we call it gay abandon?
This time.
Wow. Actually. Because I'm not particularly happy with the title. None of us can work with none of us can think of a better title. Gay Abandon. I'm going to make a phone call.
Good.
After this.
But it's I didn't have that experience when in the 80s. That wasn't the scene that I was in at that time. But
no, what do you mean?
Well, I think for a lot of gay women there wasn't that sort of that focal point like you had in sort of Canal Street. I mean, I remember going down Canal Street in the sort of late 80s, early 90s and thinking, this is amazing, but I don't know where I go. Because it was so brilliant, but it was so male-centric.
Yes. Oh, you know? Completely. And very much still the same. Yes, it's not that changed.
So because there weren't those sort of pooling areas for sort of lots of extremely sort of hopped up randy sort of girls to go, I guess I didn't have gay abandon.
You should have pitched it with that line. I would have opened that club there and then.
Oh,
Sue's. Perkins.
Perkins,
that's Perkins. The one.
And actually it made the scene feel quite separate in some ways.
Yes, yes. It's
Which
funny
because it
it's
so much now.
It's, you know, I I'm strangely aware of that I wrote Queer as Folk, so I look like... People often mistake me for the biggest scene addict. Oh, you must have been out there in the clubs and the saunas and the 3 a.m. stuff, and I think I'm really quite vanilla. And I watched it more
Oh, come
than,
now. You must have been on a sling at some point at 6 a.m.
come on, yes. That's why I'm staggered in here today. Can you imagine how awful?
He's come from the rat.
Oh, people, I go through all that. I just think, why don't you just have sex? Why just have sex, please?
Yes, it's
fun, isn't it?
Needlessly tiring and complicated.
Mm, how do you know you're into that? That's what I think. What age are you? And you think, yes, I'd like to be tied up in the corner. And see, some people are salivating to this, if not more, as I'm saying it out loud.
Well, maybe people listening to this didn't realise until you said it.
Yes.
And it's triggered them.
At some point, there's got to be that moment of triggering. I just never got triggered. I was just sitting there thinking, I'm very bored. Why didn't you try this? I think, oh, for goodness sake.
So is it about then the grass being greener for you? That kind of, you say you weren't sceney, and yet your first huge, I mean, you've done many things that, I've broken through, but I suppose the most seismic at the start was Queer as Folk.
Oh, yes.
Was that then a kind of, ooh, I would have liked that to have been my world, but it wasn't.
Well, it wasn't. No, I'm being disingenuous. It was not my world either. I've had my moments, but I did. I used to love going out there. I used to love going out on Canal Street and watching it. I used to love going out on my own. And friends of mine would pop up in clubs and I'd be really pissed off. But no, just leave me alone. And for about 10 years, I just stood there watching it all. I didn't realise I was watching it all, but I loved it and I loved watching. And they're so special, those spaces, when they come alive. And it's still, this is the case now, when you've got that dance floor and the light and the straight lines of the light and the smoke pointed down. There are people who've been working in a bank all week or unemployed all week or sitting with their mum and dad all week, and they go out and they walk through that door and they come alive. And for some of them, that's the few hours in their life still that they just come alive, but where they're gay. And I loved watching that. I could do that now.
I love it too. I love clubs and I love, as you say, this just waiting for the beat to kick in and all,
yes,
and suddenly you're unified and it doesn't matter, yes, how old you are or where you come
that
from.
That key change, literally, like a musical almost. That key change comes in, everyone lifts and the light and the smoke is there and they're joyous.
And they're just jumping up and down and there's that sea of sort of...
Oh. And I saw, in those 20 years, specifically in those 10 years, kind of like the 90s to the 1000s, I saw clubs change. When I first stood watching those clubs, there was no violence whatsoever. You never saw a fight breaking out.
Mm.
By the end of those 10 years now, like any club, like a straight club, you'll see a fight breaking out. Two people will argue, whatever. But I remember thinking, these places are kind of blissful, and they were. Maybe memory's making it a bit rose-tinted, but there was a joy and an innocence about it. There was something very special about those years.
I used to, I mean, I love watching in clubs too, but for a while I live very near the sort of pickup area in Hampstead Heath. And I would drive past, and sometimes, not in a sort of voyeuristic way, although it might sound so, but I just park up and just watch these guys come out of their cars, sort of 2, 3 a.m,
yeah,
take off their wedding rings. And I would just feel such incredible sadness.
What a story. What a great story.
But it's and I never would stay to sort of go into the depths of the world. No. I wasn't interested in what other people do sexually, has little or no interest for me.
No.
But it was more the human thing of, I wonder what kind of guy is going to be getting out of a car. And
we're still now. They're still there now. That's still happening. We know that's happening right now, still to this day.
But I wonder, for some of those people, it will be the only outlet they have because they don't feel they can be honest. But for some people, it's just transgressive and it's naughty.
Yes,
and it's
exactly.
And that's also great.
Some people having fun. Absolutely. For some people, it's a great joy. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's.
I always remember walking past that sort of area and with walking the dog, which you don't do very often there because it's they've made a right mess of it. it was a hockey mask, and I thought,
Oh,
that is,
wow, okay,
yeah,
that's Jason Voorhees,
yes,
isn't it? That's, okay. That's,
oh, gosh, someone's had a very...
I think you should have phoned the police.
No, maybe I should. There was no body. What was I to do?
Hockey mask. What,
hockey
what
mask.
Did they do with the hockey stick? Let's
I don't
stop
know.
That. Stop.
I have no idea. So I tend to, when I sort of chat to people, I never read up because I think it's just, I hate...
You're lazy.
Really. I am.
Yeah.
That's it.
No,
I was going to do some elaborate justification, but and I am. I'm a lazy piglet. But the only thing that I did look up, and I only read this one thing, which is that you wanted to be a comic book artist. Or a comic.
Yes.
This is another sign to you I don't know.
Well, it's fine. I'm kind of... I'm going to do that this year. I'm going to stop writing this year, only for this year. Hooray,
oh,
says the nation.
No, you'll only land 12 months off.
I'm just going to go and draw. And I don't mean for publication, maybe just for myself, but I feel it like it's like my hand is curling up with arthritis, not literally, but it's that feeling of needing to draw is powerful.
What do you draw? It's
cartoony stuff. In a perfect world, I draw an Asterix book. That's my kind of thing. It's not Marvel type stuff. It's cartoony. It's lively. It's 48 pages of against the, with white panels. That's my ideal. The Bande de dessinée. That kind of
thing. Did you have a character that you created when you were?
Oh, I did. When I was at Oxford, I used to draw for all the student magazines. I was at Oxford. I did a comic strip called Jessica Croom. What a strange name.
Jessica Croom.
Her name was Jessica Croom.
I like that name.
Yes, yeah, and she just have little adventures with bright young things and stuff like that.
What in a kind of 1920s kind of?
No, it was much more cartoony, much more Asterix-y, punchy punchlines, big exaggerated. Swoops in the very animated stuff, very lively stuff. That's what I like Asterix so much. That's like, I think the world is divided into Tintin and Asterix. Tintin, fixed, solid, unmoving, boring. Asterix, lines, colour, punches, stars in the around their heads.
Yes.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, I would agree with you on which side I sit.
Oh, good, because most of the world is a Tintin fan. I feel a bit niche. Nice. It's dull. Oh, my God. It's
little bit.
Like, really?
I'm only into it for the snowy, really.
Dog. Well, no, I'm not a dog. Stop there.
No. Come now. Let's we mustn't fight. No. Snow is cute. But Asterisk is properly funny.
Yeah. And that's a funny dog in Asterix that follows him around. It's lovely.
An obelisk I used to love.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. And they punch people. They punch people and they drink and they get drunk and they sing when they're drunk and they break their hearts and cry. It's full of life, Asterix.
And
I love
lots of jokes about Gauls, which you don't get anywhere else,
puns,
really.
Proper puns. See, my mum was a French teacher, so when I was about 7 or 8, we had all the French versions and it's all tied to your childhood, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I must have been 11 or 12, actually, and they came with these marvellous brochures from Hodder and Stanton, the publishers, that explained all the jokes in the drawings and in the script that I've never seen analysed in such detail anywhere else since. And there were jokes packed into these frames beyond reckoning. And I grew up on that, so that's my... I'm steeped in it. That's my ideal.
And when you draw, do you have the narrative? Which comes first, the narrative or the picture?
I don't know. That's what I'm going to find out this year. I haven't drawn properly for years and years and years. It's literally, the writing took over and it's kind of atrophying. And I need to, people are saying to me now, oh, have you started drawing? And I'm like, oh, God, it's like waking up a corpse. It's going to take a lot of electricity and a lot of thunderstorms to get this thing animated. So I'm going to get there. Slowly.
And sort of a nice sort of mindful personal thing to do.
Yes, exactly. Yes, yes, yes. I think it's trying to capture... I'm interested in the link between writing and drawing. It's like, you know, a sketch is always better than the finished drawing. Yeah. And do you feel like that with writing? It's like you've
There's
got
more
writing
movement in it.
Yes, it's
more
literally
life
true
in it.
Of literally cartoons, like classical cartoons, like Leonardo da Vinci cartoons, sketches, pencils, life, and then suddenly you draw it properly and you fill it in with ink, and it all becomes fixed and solidified. Writing is like that, don't you think? You have an idea. You do your sitcoms, your scripts you've recently done. You've got an idea, and it's there, and it's quicksilver, and it's magic and brilliant, and then it has to become words on a format
and
a full
words.
Stop. They're never the right words, and it's a paragraph. Suddenly someone has to speak in their names. It all becomes very, very formal. So the difference between having an idea and expressing that idea is enormous. And somewhere in there, that's where art is somehow. And I think I can kind of tackle that even more honestly with drawing. It's like I kind of think, oh God, I'm off now. But I kind of think all writers are failed musicians, really.
I totally agree.
If we hadn't the nerve, what we're doing is writing sweeps up and down, highs, rhythms,
cadence,
emotions, and you know, beating hearts and thunder and beauty and joy. And I think to do that in music is just pure and amazing.
All
and
I ever
wordless.
Wanted to be was a musician.
Yes, and we are stuck with words. And
isn't they call
hard
it story
work.
Beats, isn't it? So literally it's ascribing this sort of rhythmic, metrical sort of essence to storytelling.
And I'm romantic. A musician would be laughing at us now saying, actually, it's just as technical. You have to pin it down to notes and quavers and crotchets and what have you. But nonetheless, the way that a piece of music can move you ineffably is so mysterious. And because if a script can get close to that, it's so much harder, I think. It's just harder for words to do that.
But I think when you watch a piece of drama, or say when if I'm watching a piece of drama you've written, you are incredibly moved, but actually it's the spaces between the words. The words will never move you, but the essence of what you've created.
Dialogue's absolutely relevant. I always try and tell people that. It's like what matters is why they're in that scene, who are they in that scene, why they get together in that room, why that room is their place to be. It doesn't matter what they say. It's why good actors, I think good actors know that. They know that the words are just chat on top and underneath they're feeling sad or happy or hopeful or angry or whatever. And the words just go yap, 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 yap like that.
And that collision of two people in a certain circumstance is what draws you... is what draws you in. And I think...
Yes. And sometimes you get it right. Sometimes it's like music. Sometimes when it works and it's there, it sings. It's like, wow, yes.
I mean, it's a big orchestra making a drama. It's you have to get crew who are simpatico and actors who are simpatico.
Yes.
And the writing has to chime with all of those elements. Plus, you've got layers of bureaucracy that will...
And money and yes.
And that this person from America has paid for it, and then they want all the references to anything British taken out. It's a lot of things
defying what you're trying to do. And then you might be wrong. That's the thing as well. It's like you're not pure. You're not innately right about anything.
Well, there's something also about the way that when you listen to, say, music, you... But you're not passively listening, but you're not questioning it. You're being bent out of shape by the feelings that you're experiencing.
Moved.
Very moved. Whereas with drama, you can make something you think is beautiful, then you put it on the television, and then the audience is just fucking hates it.
Do we sound like we're on drugs at 2 a.m?
Maybe. I like that.
This is
all music, man.
I'd like everyone to know this is like 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday. No, Wednesday. Is it Tuesday? Wednesday. It's Coronation Street tonight.
We've gone deep, but I do.
We went straight there.
We did.
We mainline.
The pair of us are so effortlessly intense right now.
And people are sitting at home going, "Tell us if the Daleks are coming back." That's all I want to know. That's my life. People just wanting to know that.
Yes. Well. Is that still a thing? Do people just still obsess about...
I left Doctor Who 10 years ago. Marvellously, I still get... When a good episode's been on, I still get people come up going, "That was great on the weekend. Brilliant." I'm like, yeah, wasn't it good? Yeah. And then if they go, "I didn't like it," I've got nothing to do with me.
Yes.
So I get the best of both worlds now.
I have a slightly, albeit diminished, sort of similar experience with Bake Off.
Oh, of course. Yes, people still think.
You know, we're sort of in the ether somewhere.
Oh, it's nice though, isn't it? I like that.
Yeah, it is nice.
Never. I want to shake that off. Never. No,
well, I mean, that was a hell of a rebrand and a ballsy rebrand.
Doctor Who. Yes, yeah. It says not Bake Off. I can happily talk Bake Off if you want to. Let's do that.
All day long.
Indeed, I'm up for Sandy's job. I'd go and do that. I'd go and do Bake Off.
Oh, God, you'd be amazing.
Imagine that'll never happen. But
Imagine now you've said it.
Rebranding, yes, I suppose. Yes, did we use phrases like rebrand in the 2005?
No, we shouldn't reuse them now. Let's not.
Yeah. Happy days, though. They were... such, I mean, it was mad, that job, and terrifying, because it's something I'd loved all my life, and the thought of getting that wrong was properly terrifying. Literally thought, if I fuck this up now, it'll be off air forever.
And I'd be the one
on the tombstone. Yes. Instead of it being on my tombstone, I would be on its tombstone.
Do you remember which eps you loved when you were little?
Yes, yeah, so I'm a proper fan, all on DVD. And I literally remember episodes that are missing from the archives. There's stuff that was on when I was 3 years old, and you read these summaries of episodes. I go, yes, I remember that. I've got mental images of that. Things like Power of the Daleks from 1966. I can remember things that happened in that you can't see anymore, that don't exist.
So my it was first always... one was Brain of Morbius.
Wonderful. Oh, good. Tom Baker, gorgeous. Yes. I'm properly a Tom Baker boy.
That's me too.
Era.
My dad was madly in love. I mean, madly in love with her. And so that was the main
Sarah
reason.
Oh, Sarah Jane. Leslie.
And then Layla.
Leela. Louise Jameson. Yeah.
Yes, the pair of them. the seamless transition in his affections.
Yes. What a man. Monstrous. Remember how sad it was when you were young, when the companion left? It was earth-shaking.
But then everyone would gather around when there was a regeneration. And the effects would be mind-blowing.
Yeah. Well, they do now. It's amazing, isn't it? How I was talking to Stephen Moffat last night, and we were laughing about how the fact that Doctor Who's only ever got one surprise up its sleeve, which is when the Master comes back. And every 2 years, the master comes back. And every time you bring him back, it works. Every time you bring him back, people go, oh, wow, the master's back. And like, haven't you realised by now? It's all the programme does. It's 55 years old. We're bringing the master back. And yet every time, people are shocked. It's weird. It's
I want the Brigadier back.
Oh, he died in real life, bless him. I love the actor. Nicholas Courtney. He came and did, we did a spin-off called The Sarah Jane Adventures with beautiful Slayton. And he came and did one story with us just before he passed away. So he got a sort of farewell. Well, we didn't know how ill he was, but lovely man, really lovely.
He was very, very special, the Brigadier.
Gorgeous. They were happy days, weren't they?
God, there's some. I wonder if kids. I mean, I'm sure they do. They have that program that absolutely defines. They will.
Now, Doctor was on Sunday night and had this episode where a villain's fingers floated off. His fingers detached from his hand and floated around the room. And you kind of watch that thing. In 20 or 30 years' time, there'll be kids going, oh, remember the man whose fingers floated off.
That's true.
It was properly, nicely, creepy and mad in the way that only Doctor Who could do something that mad. What a mad thing to do. His fingers float around the room. That makes no sense.
No.
It's joyous through not.
It's so British.
You wouldn't get that in anything else.
No, everyone thinks we're nuts.
Yeah, there will be. There'll be people in an old folks home going, ooh, don't detach your fingers at me, love.
Yeah, don't do that. They'll float into space.
Yeah, exactly. It's
do you still watch it?
I do, yes. I'm for life. For life, you could have Doctor Who played by a mongoose, and I would be there going, yes, it was always destined to be
she's
a mongoose.
She's great.
Oh, she's gorgeous. Have you met her?
Yes.
You know her? Yeah, she's lovely.
She is fabulous.
What a wonderful woman.
All day long.
They struck gold with her. Yeah. She's hilarious, isn't she? She's properly funny.
Very real and truthful to who she is. And
yes.
She's such a...
Yeah, not a false bone in her body, is there? It's like she's really, really special.
She just makes me laugh a lot.
Oh, that's nice. Good.
Yeah. So... Take me through the new show. You said it's... Boys gives us a fairly good clue.
Boys.
And we know that it's the decade between 81 and 91. Why is it you think that you return... I mean, we all do to a certain extent, but to that preoccupation of a sort of... Gay men in particular at turning points in their lives.
Yes, I'm simply fascinated by it. I mean, it's my life, and it's the life of a lot of people around me. And literally, if you're gay, you sit next to me, I can't stop myself going, so tell me about when you were 13, 14, 15, tell me about how you came out to your mother, tell me about your dad, tell me about when you were 21. I just love those stories. I love them. I love hearing them. And they're all kind of the same after a while. There's not many of those that can shock you. But they change as well. They also change. I had a fascinating one recently. This young lad who's kind of training to be a lawyer, who is a lawyer, but had quite a bad home life. His father had been terrible, basically. And his father was... truly homophobic in a really old-fashioned sense. His father chucked him out of home and said, out you get, filthy son of man. He said, you know, he belonged to like a five-a-side rugby team, football team. How can I ever let my mates know you're gay? I'm ashamed of you. Okay, chucked him out of home, went to football on the weekend, told his story to the lads. The lads all turned around and said, you bastard, you terrible man. What on earth? We're ashamed of you. How can you throw your son out? What have you done? And they literally barracked him and bollocked him and made him go and get his son back. And that's a great story, isn't it?
It's a great story.
You know, sometimes you get stories like that and you go, wow, the world has changed.
Using other people to justify your own
fear.
And
they're turning
craziness.
On him like that. I love that. That's the scene you want to write.
That's a scene you want to write.
Oh, my God. And things are not rosy between father and son now, but they're much better. And that's lovely. That makes you think, God, these stories do keep changing, although they're fundamentally the same. The details of them keep changing. And I just love those stories. I will forever, forever tell those stories. Forever.
A friend of mine, he came out to his dad in the late 80s, early 90s, and his dad was so traumatised, he crawled around the floor and basically sort of was so disturbed and disgusted.
Wow.
And my mate got married about 15 years later on a cliff in the Pacific in Hawaii. And his dad was there.
Wow.
And all he said was, we've come a very long way to be here, some of us, to my eternal shame, more than others.
Oh, wow.
And I just lost it. I just thought, you know, to take that moment to acknowledge that, you know, the cogs turn more slowly for him.
On a cliff top.
Oh.
But my favourite bit in that story is the crawling on the floor. That's what I want to dramatise. That's wow.
But that's the thing. Wow. Why do we always want to be... I'm obsessed with the gay psyche, right? We always want to be dramatic and sort of tortured.
But that's great.
It's not good for your heart.
We give it a happy ending. But it does have a happy ending in the end, but... gosh, the man, actually, that's fascinating with the straight psyche. That's a straight man's story. Like, what on earth is so polaxing that yes. you were reduced to grow? That's fascinating. I'm genuinely fascinated. I wouldn't find that easy to write because I don't find it easy to believe. I'm truly drawn to that as a story because yeah, that's what I like writing. It's like, how on earth do you get there? How on earth did you end up like that? Where are you? Who are you? That's amazing.
I think it had to do with the kind of, and I don't know if you had this, I certainly did, but you know, he and I were the first generation that stayed on at school beyond 14 and had, in a way, carried consciously or subconsciously the expectations of not just our parents, but like generations of people. And I think you upset that apple cart,
yes.
you know, and my mate, I mean, he got into Oxford and he's incredibly sort of preeminent in his field. He's everything that a dad or a mum could ever want. And he's a beautiful human being. But I think that was, oh no, that doesn't fit what we wanted for you.
No.
And I think exactly. maybe that their vision of the trajectory of their son was so crystallized that when it broke, it was just too much.
Yes, and I think it is. I'm going to sound like I'm on a soapbox now, but it is a soapbox. I love this soapbox. If you get those stories out there, it changes the world slightly. I'm not causing revolutions, but some people see those stories that haven't seen them before and they change their mind. And I know that because that happens to me. It's many years ago, you are literally sitting in front of a photo of Alan Davis as we speak, because we're in the QI offices. And many years ago, I wrote a drama with Alan Davis called Bob and Rose, which is based on a friend. Soon, by the way, to be on BritBox. It hasn't been streaming for years. It's been locked away in an archive. Hooray for BritBox. It's going to be back. It's a nice show, that one.
It's a really
nice show. Actually, I think it's the best thing I've ever written, to be honest. And that is about a gay man falling in love with a woman. That happened to a friend of mine. That's quite an ordinary story now in this fluid 2020.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, nothing to it. Back in 2000, when I wrote that, that was, a lot of people got up in arms about that. Like, a gay man was selling out, or why? But it all was based around a friend of mine, a gay man who genuinely fell in love with a woman, and the prejudice that he faced from gay men, never mind anyone else, from gay men and the whole community up in arms saying, you're betraying us, you're letting yourself down. And I was one of those people saying, how he's having a nervous breakdown, he's after her money, or he just wants kids. I could not believe it until I sat down and talked to him. And he explained how he felt and how much he loved her. And literally, I felt my mind revolve. And I realised how prejudiced I'd been. How absolutely wrong I'd been. Very simply, in the course of a conversation. So I know that your mind can change when you see these things and when you hear these things. Because my mind has. And I think we're doing the same by putting them out there in the world. Not everyone's mind. And you can't hope for that. But some people's minds will simply flip and go, oh, that's a good thing. I thought it was a bad thing. It's a good thing.
It's the more stories, the better. The thing is, we've only had a few stories up until recently.
I know. It's isn't it amazing? What I want to write next is, and I don't know even how
I love
to
the
start.
Fact you're supposed to be taking a break, but I know. You've already got the next one.
2021. No, 2021 is this rapid. I mean, there used to be those flag organisations, Friends of Lesbian Gays and Parents of Friends of Lesbian Gays, that for 30, 40 years have been quite normal. My daughter's a lesbian, my son is a gay man. Now the words and the adjectives and the brackets and the categories are swooping in, and I'm dying to write a drama about how middle-aged people coping with this.
With sort of pansexualism and queer identity. And
can't you just be gay? Maybe that's the title. Can't you just be gay?
I love it. I, a friend of mine's daughter rather perfunctorily said, I'm pansexual, as I was cooking scrambled eggs.
Yes.
And I said, that's great. And I said, have you had sex yet? No.
No. Oh, wow.
And I just thought, how... but in a way, everything... Some people would say, well, how can you know what you are if you haven't had sex? But what I thought is, you're not limiting yourself. You're saying, I haven't chosen which body I'm which beautiful body I'm going to lie next to you. But I have identified myself as someone who doesn't rule anyone or anything else. And that was just gorgeous.
It is lovely, but also because every step we take, the prejudice takes a new shape. It's like water flooding into a footprint, and it just fills the space. It never goes away. Because recently, I know a man, I will try not to give away too many details, but I know a man whose daughter de-transed. Now, that was new to me. That's being trans backwards and saying,
okay.
No, she had... wanted to transition. She had lived for many years trying to transition. I'm not giving away too many details now, but, and then simply went away to college and simply phoned up and said, no, I've changed my mind. And which is fascinating. Good for you. But the amazing thing was he'd been the loveliest father and the nicest, kindest man, and yet could not hide his joy at what happened. And I thought he was so happy with her, genuinely, with all his heart as being trans, and the reactions to his silent but visible joy were quite shocking and challenging. And yet lovely. She was happy, therefore he was happy. No one's wrong in this.
No.
But, you know, what? How complicated it is now. I mean, there's no rights and wrongs in that at all.
No,
but,
it is complicated. Because yes, now the body can change, you know. To
and there are people who will object to the word detransing. I guarantee you there will be trans people or trans activists or those who are on the side of those people who will be saying, don't use that word. And that makes me want to use that word. Oh, fascinating.
But I think a good rule of thumb is... it's no one else's business. You know what I mean,
yes,
isn't it?
Apart from murderers.
Yes, of course. I mean, one must involve it.
No, absolutely.
It really doesn't matter to me how people choose to represent themselves, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else.
No, of course.
It's not sort of, you know, for example, homophobic or impinges on my rights and my ability to live a free, decent life.
That's what I mean about the prejudice. It'll take new and surprising forms. It's still there.
I agree.
And, you know, those of us who get older, everyone objects to these new changes, and the people going through these changes have to be the first lemmings over the cliff. But they are actually paving a way for the next generation to... It never stops.
But it doesn't. And you know, there's all that vicious, awful anti-trans stuff that's bubbling under. But equally...
Oh, shocking.
I don't necessarily trust... this government not to sort of pop back into a sort of Section 28.
Oh, we're in a very dangerous time. My goodness me, we've got this government for 10 years, if not 15, and they are not friendly towards us, not remotely. You watch.
No, I totally agree.
Chip away at us now.
And I think that's...
Never mind, the gays, the women's rights, and all sorts of... Oh, my God. We're in trouble.
But there are, you know, there's sort of trad wives kind of websites where, you know, the only criteria is to not be a feminist and to subordinate and, you know, and that's becoming in vogue. And, you know, virginity and the sort of, and religious sort of morals will, all this stuff will creep back.
But here we are. Here we are heating. I know, so we become prejudiced. I hate those people. I do. I hate them. I'm prejudiced against them. They're wrong.
I don't hate them, but I just don't want them to tell.
I can feel the hate rising. I can.
If a woman says to me that her life is about looking beautiful for a man.
Oh, see, I hate her.
I don't. I just go, well, we're different then. But
yes,
and I'm going
right.
to try and not argue with you because you might say something to me which will
don't
make me.
You think less of her?
I feel
surely
confused.
You think she's less
well,
clever?
I tell you what, I'm sort of probably not. I probably judge her internally in the way that she'd judge me, and the sort of ramshackle, appearance, and my needless devotion to not appealing to anybody.
This conversation we're having, they truly despise it.
But I just sort of, I think there was something pathological underneath it motivating it. But she'd think that something pathological was motivating my queerness or my independence or my feminism. So.
Yes. I think you're a nicer person than I am. Everything seems to be getting angrier.
I get very angry at something.
The angriness of the world is fascinating to me.
It is the end of the world now.
Well, yeah, certainly in the West. I think it's getting worse. It's getting heated, it's getting angry, it's getting...
But you managed to write a show about the future in which almost... As it was going out, we'd caught up with you.
How nicely we linked into that. I know,
we'd caught up by the end.
We had a virus. We had a virus where people were being put in camps, in temporary military camps while they were ill. And here we are. Hello, I call it monkey flu. But basically, I mean, I have no special powers. I hate to disabuse you of the notion. But basically, the world is so mad, I could have written anything. I mean, who could ever have written Donald Trump standing in that gold room surrounded by 1,000 hamburgers?
The world is
madder than ever. And it's truly mad. It's like, can you imagine, what did we talk about in 2006? What was on the news? What did we worry about? I mean, they were golden days. I don't care who was in power. They were quite ordinary, normal, straightforward days. And we genuinely lived in a world where we thought every generation is getting better. Every generation will live longer. Every generation will be cleverer. I genuinely used to believe that, and I don't believe that anymore.
No, I don't believe that anymore. I mean, just 2012, I was sitting watching the Olympics with the drummers and a dance sequence celebrating the NHS.
Absolutely. And with Mary Poppins as a heroine striding across the nation. What a beautiful thing that was.
The Queen Isn't parachuting out of an airplane.
King to Brunel, wasn't he joyous? Little did we know, it was the last knell. It was the tolling bell.
But I just think we're furious because we're in that. We didn't expect to be at this particular turning point in history.
Mm.
I mean, it was always going to come round, but we just are very angry that it's come round now. When we're, you know.
I mean, it's 2008 as the turning point, was the banks, which we haven't fixed, and it's going to happen again.
Yes.
And we all suffered as a result. That's the real problem. And I think that has caused a fury. That's why wages haven't gone up. That's why people are trapped. That's why they're not earning enough. It's literally an economic problem. That's why I say make Martin Lewis the Prime Minister.
Oh, God.
He just understands. I mean, laws take care of themselves. Laws are sensible. A parliament can decide laws. Put an economist in charge of the country like Martin Lewis and we'll run like a dream.
You're right. There's a sort of... it's the moment somebody starts going, we can make money out of other people's debt.
Yes. Yes. Oh, the way they're planning, the way the costs are rising on HS2, I'll build it for half the price. Give it to me.
I wouldn't build
Give
it
me
at all.
I don't know. An hour and 11 minutes from London to Manchester.
I think it was Viz this morning that said, I've got the answer to the HS2. Schedule your meetings 20 minutes later. And it's just a thought, oh, God, I love Viz anyway. It was just like, yes.
You are right, yes. Do we need to be there any faster?
100
you are right.
Ancient woodlands and people's homes and...
I do like my pitch for doing it at half the price, though. I'm surprised you haven't picked me up on that.
All right, okay.
We'd be good.
I need to see budgets. I'm not going to just accept that on face value.
HS2 TD. That's what I'm pitching.
I want a comic storybook where...
Yes. One lone gay man building a rail
Jessica
network.
Chrome decides to build... God. White elephants and a bridge. A bridge literally over troubled waters
it's
between England
we
and...
We told people it really is 2 a.m.
But Boris's answer to everything is just build a bridge. A literal... But none of them work. None of them will actually
Apparently that Northern Ireland bridge is literally... You'd have to sink a column 12 mines deep or something.
He'll have us doing it.
I wouldn't go on that.
And one to England and Scotland.
Could build it and send him over as the first man. That would be interesting.
Nobody
Off
wants
you go, Boris.
Nobody wants us.
I know.
Scottish people understandably don't want us coming over on a bridge or anywhere, any other mode of transport.
They'd
over
be
there.
Very happy. As it is so, isn't it? Strange. Why is that even a parliament? There are people starving and we're talking about a bridge. You see, I think they're very clever. It's like the right wing have seized the language. And they've seized the imagination. Because they know what they're doing. All the language of PR and showbiz and manipulation is theirs. And
how gullible we all are.
Scrabbling. Well, we should be using it.
How do you co-opt language like that? I don't understand.
They did. See, the left wing was meant to be creative and arty and marvellous and in charge of language. And they laughingly moved in and swept it and took it off us. We didn't notice because we thought we were so clever.
Well, it's that thing of when they go low... You go high. I think when they go low, you just have to sort of get below and
Let's go
get
low.
Dirtier and
I know.
Fouler.
Yes, that's kind of fun. Yes.
And rebrand every...
I was just drowning Boris on a bridge, on an unsafe bridge. So it's.
I want accountability. And I'm not even talking about sort of just the right. I mean, either side.
I equally despair the left. No, absolutely.
I want a system where if you promise us, the electorate, something and you not only don't deliver it, but we're completely lying about its plausibility,
yes.
I want you to face consequences.
Yes, absolutely.
What happened to that? Is that not enshrined in our political system somewhere?
Yes, yes. Isn't it obvious when you walk through a city centre, there should not be homeless people sitting in the door. And the numbers of the home. I walked through Cardiff recently. It was shocking. It was the numbers of people who were not there 15 years ago.
Not
they
there
literally
5 years
were
ago.
Not 5 years ago. No. And there's something about a city centre at night and a homeless person that feels right now. I think, yes, this is what city centres look like. How have we been fooled into thinking that when they used to not be there? I can remember. And they did used to be there 25 years ago. It's like, frankly, Tony Blair got rid of them all. He housed them. He found, and now we're not even allowed to say that. Or we get called Tory. Oh, don't stop me. I'm off.
It is the fact that you're right, that you can so quickly become... being on a tube train, and every tube journey I take, and I take a journey most days, someone will step on and say, I'm really sorry to bother you.
Mm.
And I haven't had that on the 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't do the tube. So, yeah,
With people with mental health issues or addiction issues, all of whom who should be embraced by a system and looked after.
It should be our pleasure to look after these people.
Yeah.
And our duty.
And you sort of... you're right. It's how can you drive home in your limousine all the way from number 10 and not see?
10 or 15 more years of this. Absolutely. No
well, you will need to just You'll need to smash out some more beats. You'll need to...
That doesn't work, though, does it? If only we could make a piece of art, then... Do you think?
I do, because I think lots of the things that you've done have changed the landscape. I do.
Well, that's very kind.
But I believe that. I'm not just saying it. No, I can bust you up without a microphone in front of me. but I think, particularly queer as folk, just showed...
Gosh.
If you show what people are most frightened of, and you did it with the Very English Scandal as well, it's like there are perhaps a few people in Middle England still left who find the act of sex between two men frightening, so I'm going to show it.
Yes.
And then once you've written to your local newspaper and screamed and shouted, you can become involved with these people who are just like you. Yes. Just like you, with the same insecurities and grandiosity. And that's a big thing to do. And you're bold. And if you hadn't been so bold about the sex, people wouldn't have been so curious about the other stuff.
And yeah, we're talking about a world that seems to be swinging the other way against that. It's like, yes, there were some people, the chosen few, our chosen few, who were, but do we just preach the converted? Do we? That's the dread of my life.
No, I think you carry on telling stories that are warm and funny and you make people feel good and you make people slowly realise that we're all in it together and it doesn't really matter who you take to bed of an evening or where you come from or, you know, what your bank balance is. We're all fellow sufferers.
I'm kind of excited by that. I'm 57 this year. I'm kind of excited by that new generation that's doing that. People like Sex Education on Netflix, Laurie Nunn writer. That gives me hope for the world. That makes me think every kid is watching that. And it's so cheeky and ribald and moving. Have you seen that second series?
Not yet.
Oh, my God. You cry. There's a story about a girl being abused on a bus and all her friends gather around her and support her. And it's also a funny story. And it makes you cry in its resolution. The fact that that's Netflix, the fact that that's streaming on a great big commercial platform, and every teenager is watching it because it swears, because there's nudity, because it's cheeky, but also because it's their life. They're seeing their life. So there is hope. There are young, new writers writing stuff that makes me feel old, and I think, oh, brilliant, this is exactly how I'm meant to feel. Brilliant, yes, go on, show me.
But also there's a kind of irreverence, which is great about this, which is... You don't have to set up things or apologise for things anymore. You just sort of say them and do them.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was that easy, actually, 10 years ago even.
No, I suppose. Yes, I mean, yes, that's when we were lucky. We're all lucky to have something like Channel 4. Actually, I've got away with murder on BBC One. I think you can get away with murder anywhere. I don't ever think I'm getting away with murder. I think what I'm right to should be there. I think it has a right to be there.
Well, I love that Very English. I just mentioned Very English Scandal, which I just adored.
Oh, thank you. Lucky with that.
God, it was good.
What a story.
But again, when we've talked about politics, that's exactly that, isn't it? There's somebody in a position of wealth and privilege and power who can do whatever they want. I mean, it's a story of the abuse of power and the abuse of a vulnerable young man.
Yes.
As much as it is. That's what's amazing about what you did. Because it's also a romp.
Yes.
And I don't know how you did that.
But yes, I mean, no one died. It's very interesting when they do the Perfumer scandal, which I thought was which was beautifully written by Amanda Coe, but someone died in that. Stephen Ward committed suicide. So that sets the tone. You have to be...
Yes.
But actually, the marvellous thing about a Very English Scandal was actually only a dog got shot. Sorry, dog lovers, but that's all that
I
happened.
I am a dog lover.
You are.
And that
but...
was... I couldn't... It was so awful, that.
And it was a Great Dane. If you're going to shoot a dog... When I discovered that, I'd always imagined it was a little kind of pooch.
Yes.
When I'd heard... When I listened to it on the news
you're
as a child.
You're actually gleeful now.
When I discovered it was a Great Dane, that was one of the things that made me decide to do it. I was like, oh, people would think I just made that up. People think I just went for the biggest dog. And it really, really, really was a Great Dane. That's amazing. No wonder he shot it.
What do you mean, no wonder he shot it?
Well, if I was going to shoot a man and he had a Great Dane, I'd shoot the Great Dane first.
They're such gentle animals.
But he didn't know that.
Size isn't everything.
Gentle
animals.
But I think if your owner was shot in front of you, then it might go for you. So
listen,
I think...
If I had to shoot anybody and there was a really nasty 5'5" kind of guy sort of menacing, I'm not going to shoot you at 6'6" just because you're bigger.
Oh, right. I fear the dog. I think...
What is it with you and dog? What happened? Did you not have them as a kid?
Never. No, my father hated them. But again, I've just absorbed that. Just an absorbed... Never had them. No, never had any pets. I had a hamster that lasted about a month and I forgot to feed him. And he was horribly dead when I went back to that shed. Oh, I'm sorry.
This is not going to play well.
I am a murderer.
The one thing you know more than I do, is that we are a nation of animal lovers.
Yes.
And the callous way You've just said, I forgot to feed him.
I will be set adrift after this. They'll put me on a raft and send me out into the English Channel saying, good luck, off to Europe with you. Be gone.
I don't fare well with rodents, but I have looked after a few. Mel had a rosetted guinea pig called Nigel Tufnell, which she said, can you look after it for 2 weeks? 2 weeks, of course, became 2 years. She never picked it up. And I sat with this weird, musky, fidgety little thing.
We have to come back to the word rosetted. Wow.
So imagine sort of like a Trumpian kind of comb around.
Wow.
So this sort of incredible walnut whip of hair around the sort of neck and incredible.
They've got very red eyes, haven't they?
Oh, it was a boar. So it was a male, musky male.
Oh, they're called boars.
They're called boars and they're chunky and they nip.
Yes.
And I didn't know what to do with it. But then one night I was watching Le Colonel Chabert with Gérard Depardieu.
Well, yes, a great guinea pig sauce, I would think.
Obsessed.
Is it?
We worked out that Nigel was obsessed with foreign language film. And I'm not lying. Take it out. And when it was any world cinema, we'd just go, beep, 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 which is guinea for I'm having the time of my life. And then we'd do a gentle dry pellet.
Gosh.
Just of excitement.
So the smallest agitation, you'd put on the red balloon or something.
It was just if that guinea pig had lived to see Walter Presents Strand on...
he died. Was there a terrible end? Nigel? Oh.
Well, no, there wasn't a terrible end in the way that I did feed and love and adore Nigel. So he lived for nearly 5 years, which in guinea years...
Oh, fair dues. Mel not miss him? Did she say, how's Nigel? She's a monster.
She... I'm glad you've said that. People should know that.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Come on. She couldn't be... Well, I think she just got pregnant and it was just like, it's too much.
Gosh. She did do the live ITV version of The Sound of Music. And
wasn't it
makes
great?
Her royalty. It was wonderful. Wasn't it wonderful? Much underrated, that.
Directed by her sister.
Yes. I wrote to her. I wrote to Cookie and said, what an amazing piece of work that was. I loved it.
Totally agree with you. I think that's something that broadcasters should, you know, the more they're under pressure, particularly obviously the BBC in the current climate, the more they should kick back and go, we're doing this spectacular. We're doing this live event.
Absolutely. It's a big thing in America. They've done Greece and Rocky Horror and things like that. We only did The Sound of Music and kind of gave up. I gave up too soon.
Oh, I want
Come
more.
On. My, do you
Let's go mad. West Side Story.
Speaking to a man who loves The Masked Singer. Have you watched The Masked Singer?
Do you know what? I was very...
It's magnificent.
I was unduly sniffy. I just thought... And then I watched and now... Well, I'm obsessed with it.
Obsessed? Hooked. Final this week. I guess someone asked me out on Saturday night. Are you kidding?
Obsessed with
beautiful costumes. And I'm genuinely sitting there going, are you Catherine Jenkins? Are you? Surely you are.
So...
Oh, I love it.
I'm thinking... I mean, I don't know when this goes out. It'll be an interesting record of how wrong we were.
It'll be old. Yes.
Hedgehog, I'm saying, has got to be Jason Manford.
I'm with you on that. Sometimes I think it's Alfie Bow, but he's not singing well enough, friends. No offence to Jason Manford. That's not...
It's more of a... And I love Jason's voice. It's more of a musical theatre voice rather than a vibrato-y, tenor-y vibe.
And he's kind of... He's a nice actor as well. And it's kind of a bit acted. Yes, let's go for Jason. Yes.
Octopus. You're saying Jack... I still think Charlotte Church.
No, but it's much more operatic than Charlotte Church's. Since puberty hit, when her voice dropped, then she's not that operatic singer anymore. I'm going Catherine. I'm going there.
All right, and then Queen
Bee. Well, it's a girl
Queen
allowed.
Queen Bee was
it's
great.
A girl allowed-y person, isn't it? Or Little? It's not a Little Mix. They're too busy. But
I think could it be? It could be Jessie from Little Mix.
They're busy.
Do you think it's a Nicole from...
Yes, I think that's likely.
Girls Aloud.
Yes. Who has got a great voice. Nicole's got a truly great voice.
Come
and
really
brilliant.
Into her own, the last
Look at
day.
Us, look at us. We're like...
I'm obsessed with it.
This is why we're not saving the world.
I was really
going,
turfed
Let's save the world.
With.
Oh, no, sorry, The Masked Singer's on.
But this is the point.
They've got us.
The Masked Singer, in its own way, does quietly make the world a better place.
It was Skin. Skin is the duck. Did you see that reveal? That was amazing. Do you know Skin from Skunk and Nancy?
Yes, who I
was
love.
Duck. Was Duck. The funniest one there was Duck, and that's brilliant. That sort of thing, you think, wow, you're a laugh.
And the guy from Jake from Scissor Sisters.
You're gorgeous. Yes. Oh, my
beautiful.
God. Yes. That
it's
beautiful
a proper
thing.
Caliber they've got in there.
I know. You see, is this a government plot, though? Because we're about to man the barricades. We're about to overthrow the government. They say, put something shiny on ITV, and all these people will just go and sit and watch it and laugh.
Trepidation.
We are being led astray by the Masked Singer.
No,
it's a plan.
I think the Masked Singer is a good...
Good government policy. I joined that cabinet, actually.
You're not saying that Gove et al. Is responsible for putting the Masked Singer on. Sort of bread and circuses.
It's a great plot.
It is a great plot.
Actually, it's a bit Doctor
it's a
Who
really
story.
Good plot.
That really, one of my Doctor Who's, that's what they do.
So it'd be like...
bread and circuses.
Yes, the government are going to do something absolutely terrible. What they decide to do is on all channels just show this mesmerising talent contest.
Let's put Denise Van Outen on dressed as a mirrored fox.
Oh my God.
And we're distracted.
Everyone needs a mirrored fox in their living room, let's face it.
I would wear that. I would wear that.
Do you know what? So would I.
Gorgeous.
She had a real way about it, isn't she?
We're distracted. We're there. We were about to... If we kept going down our 2 a.m. path, we would have reached the solution and overthrown the government. And off we went.
But you can't just have... This is a thing in life. You can't just have political intensity from our narrow metropolitan elite viewpoint.
Greta would say otherwise. She wouldn't sit and watch The Masked Singer, would she? She'd tell us, like, she should. I know, maybe, but it's like,
I love Greta entirely. Mm. But
she is hope for the world, absolutely.
She must also, I hope, kick back with a masked celebrity dressed as an octopus.
Yes,
it's genius.
Yes. It's fascinating. She is the most interesting person in the world right now. In the world,
yes.
And it's very. I keep thinking, how do you write a drama about her? And actually, it's 16. One of those things where her life is more interesting than any drama. It's really hard to dramatize that. I keep thinking I should be doing this. Dramatising climate change is the hardest thing.
You did it in years.
It touched on it, is it? It rained a lot. It's dramatising something. Well, it's not invisible, but it's mighty. It's the weather.
Did you see the picture that she posted? It made me cry, as most things do these days. She had a picture of what an incredible couple of years or something. She said it's been, and there was a picture of her with a banner on her own, sitting outside school on strike.
I didn't see that.
It's so moving. And then another one of her with a million people behind her. And it's extreme. I mean, but that shot of her as a sort of moody teenager, and it was the first day of the first strike she did.
Oh, that's the most exciting thing. School strikes, it's like they seem to have petered away. I think the teachers have won. Go on, kids, strike. And listen to my voice on this microphone. Kids strike. If I need power of my voice.
Huge fan of disruptive action, direct action.
What a great action. Stop, just stop. It's their future we're ruining. My lovely niece just had twins. They're 11 months old now. Beautiful little boy. She thought, what is the world going to be like? That's when you start to worry, when you see little tiny kids thinking, God, I'll be gone in 70 years. Long gone. What is this world going to be like?
It's just the little lungs, isn't it? And thinking, what are you breathing in?
Yes,
what are we
doing? Yes.
And then, but that thing of, you know, oh, we can't do anything. Well, we sort of have to now.
Mm.
I sort of share your kind of confusion as to whether the sort of artistically the response is something like Years and Years where you're showing it, or Masked Singer where you're diverting from it. I think a combination of both.
It is both. Yes. That's true. Except now they'll close down the BBC and that's literally going to happen. It's like nakedly saying by 2027... we won't have a license fee, and that's the plan. That's literally going to happen now, and it's impossible to defend the BBC for more than 30 seconds before reaching the word but, and so we're trapped. Oh, it's great for this, it's great for that, but they shouldn't do this. Oops, stop it. Stop
what
saying.
What I don't
but.
Understand is why attack an organisation that you've now you've populated half. I think it is the. I mean, I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think. With the last white paper, half of the board of the BBC Trust is government appointees.
Mm. Yes.
So you already have a degree of... In the nation's broadcaster, which should be impartial.
Yes.
And everyone in Boris's government shouting, it's biased. Well, the bias is technically in your favour because you have decided who controls... It's very strange, but you're right. It's the language they've co-opted language of.
Well, no, and they just lie to us. Nicky Morgan does a speech saying, you know, how the BBC is lagging behind in the digital age, and it's led by Netflix. The BBC has been setting the digital template for 30 years. They're way ahead. They have done this. Everyone else has followed, and now they get criticised for and lied about, and everyone believes it because everyone loves their Netflix. Oh yes, that's technically. Digitally ahead of the BBC. No, it isn't.
But also the loss that Netflix is currently making.
Oh, yes. Floating on a sea of debt. Absolutely, absolutely.
And then what happens? I mean, so they get bought out by Amazon, and then Amazon get bought out by Apple, and then we're all just
enslaved. And they'll all raise their prices. And anyway, it's not about the price. It's a great price to pay for the BBC.
I mean, I to provide a counter-argument, I've always
been
very
quick. I know, because we're so... Yes.
But I love it, and I would defend it to the hilt. But, you know, I think it's been very easy... for its detractors to point at imprisonment. You know, I mean, this is a, you know, that's always sat, particularly in an age of austerity, and when, you know, I think perhaps measures could have been taken to, I don't know, to not put the word in prison on leaflets. But I remember running from TV detectors when we were students and we were watching in an old black and white, and they came round and knocked. We were squatting. And they came and knocked, and we literally all hit the deck. It's like they'd been a bomb squad. We were just sort of crawling around on the floor, really? Like sort of vets, you know.
You're crawling on the floor like a man who'd just been told his son was gay.
Yes, exactly that.
Did they ever work for those bands? Really? Really? Yes. Really? Really? But it's like, all right, then yes, it's not very nice if anyone goes to prison for not paying something they should pay. Tough. It's like, that's what happens. It's like, are we going to lift that on everything? Fine. Like, is everything going to have its rules lifted? Don't pay. That's all right. If you're told you're going to pay something, if that's the law, then you pay it. Sorry, but you do.
Yeah, there is that argument.
It's like, I mean, and actually, and please go and chase Amazon for its tax rather than do that. Yes, there are other ways, other things you could be chasing. Go and get the billions, thank you very much. Not the £150 off that woman. But it's true. They?
I mean, Amazon pay no tax.
Oh, it just makes me sick to my stomach. I try not to use them. I tried to have a ban, but now, I mean, 61 shops a day close in this country. 61 shops a day. You go through Swansea city centre, it's barren. It's a ghost town. It's dreadful. And literally, it's being closed by Amazon. That's not even an analogy. That's what's closing it.
And pubs and meeting spaces and social groupings and community halls and everything just...
God, what do we...
We're going to stay
Sue,
in...
what do we sound like to 14-year-olds? It's no good saying we're siding with Greta when we sound like old people.
I think
we're
if I was a 14-year-old... Yeah, I think as a 14-year-old, I'd probably go, do something, you whinging old fart.
Yes. I think that's probably... Oh, it's your fault. I said, it's your fault you let this happen. But we didn't let anyone not pay tax.
No. We didn't have any say in that.
No, we didn't... We didn't see it coming, did we? We let it happen.
But I hope the 14-year-olds would also understand that we are gleeful and cheeky and naughty, and you in particular have done things that have, you know, quietly and contentiously given them a space to be who they are.
Oh, I suppose, but to them it's like watching Kathy Come Home, isn't it? It's that old show from years ago.
Seven Up or whatever.
Well done, the archives, yes.
It's
funny with something like Chris, you go through, you do feel the years passing because it went through, hooray, all the gays love that show. So then about 10 years later, it's like, oh, that old thing. And then you reach a stage of like, yes, I've heard of that. And now you reach a stage of, no, I haven't heard of that. It's like, wow.
But honestly, that's, you're that's pecking wow. now. That's you're pecking at your own legacy.
I pecked myself to death.
Don't peck your own legacy.
I read my own book. I'm just sorry. Don't peck.
Yeah. Don't stop whatever you do. You're allowed a year of cartooning.
Oh, all right.
And then I want you back.
Right, back on duty.
Yes. Promise?
Promise. I do promise. I will. We have to.
Good.
Gosh.
Good.
See you there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Love and thanks to Russell and his new series, Boys, should be broadcast sometime early next year. As always, the music in this episode was by Waiting for Smith, and you can listen to more of his music on Spotify. Yes, it's true. When I'm down and I'm blue.